Good evening, everybody. I'm so pleased to see you all this evening. We have some of you I have not seen for some times. It's good to see you again. I don't have any particular topic to talk on today, but I'd like to draw your attention to our meditation practice that is good for any occasion, any time, anywhere. Therefore, it is not out of place if I mention something about our meditation practice. In our in the teachings of the Buddha, that is of our life blood, in the spiritual training, also that is the heart of Buddha's teaching. In all Buddhist sects, whether it is Mahayana, Theravada, Vajrayana, whatever, in all sects, this practice of meditation is emphasized. Though it has become a very popular subject, there also is a great deal of misunderstanding. Either it is overly simplified or made it very difficult to practice. When it is simplified, people become so complacent and don't take it seriously and let it happen naturally. As some people think, just be aware of what is happening around you. So you will attain enlightenment. You don't have to do anything. Just be as you are. Just go with the flow. You know, just take it easy. Don't worry. Don't make effort. You know, it happens to you. It is your nature. You are enlightened. You don't have to worry. You are enlightened, but you don't know. That is one way of looking at meditation. However, that is not actually what we learn in the Buddha's teaching from the scriptures. Maybe some individuals come up with various ideas just to throw very catchy phrases to amaze people. I think that is too simple. On the other hand, there is another way of looking at meditation, which has become extremely, almost impossible. That is this analytical system. You keep analyzing, breaking down to very nitty-gritty details and go on and on, like microbiology, you know, nanoseconds and so forth. You keep breaking down. I don't know how many people can do that. That is what this atomists, some scientists do. They keep breaking down material things. They learn to break atoms and finally made atomic bombs. So that is all material as approach. When we look at the Buddha's sutras, we don't see that kind of nitty-gritty breaking down system. However, we have to look at the Buddha's sutras. Unfortunately, that is the very thing that people don't look at. They don't want to study. They simply want to meditate without knowing the Buddha's guidelines. If we try to meditate, we will get bewildered, confused, and don't know what we are doing. And that is what has happened to many people. People ask us, how do I know that I have made progress? How to gauge, how to measure my progress? This is a very common question, because they don't know what they do. They ask, they follow this system, this teacher's instruction, that teacher's, and so forth, but even though they spend many hours sitting on cushions and counting cushion hours, how many hours, how many days, how many months I mentioned, how many retreats I went to, they go from retreat to retreat. If they hear, oh, in such and such a place there's a good meditation teacher, come, let's go. They spend a lot of time, energy, and go there, and spend hours and hours and days on. And then here, there's another teacher, let's go there. Then go there and meditate. So they keep, you know, window shopping, meditation window shopping. And they are, when they look at themselves, they are at the same place. They have gained nothing. They are mental. They never look at where they are supposed to look at. They never do what they are supposed to do. One doesn't have to go that far to practice meditation. Buddha has laid down the plan, Buddha has laid down the method, the system, given very clearly, beautifully, very clearly. And they just ignore that. Ah, this is the Buddha saying, who cares? What, tell what you know. When we try to explain the meditation from the Buddha's words, using Buddha's own words, they say, ah, who cares for that? Tell what you know, what you experience. Tell me from your own experience. You know what we experience? We experience we through by following the system, a method. If we don't follow a method, we cannot verbalize our experience. We cannot tell what we experience. Buddha asks us to look at our mind. That is exactly what we are not doing. In order to see how far we have developed in our meditation, what we have gained, what is our progress, where we are, we must look at our mind, not the body. We may see very little progress by looking at the body. Body, even whatever is happening in the body, should be understood by the way how we look at what has happened to the body. For example, we in the four foundations of mindfulness, number one is body. By using the body, we simply don't look at the body just like biologists, physicists, chemists look at the body. We look at the body to understand what happens when we use the body in various ways. what happens to the mind, what happens to us inside in our mind, when we use the body in thousands of different ways. I give you a couple of examples, very familiar examples from the discourse itself. Buddha said, be mindful of, have clear understanding of, when you go forward, have clear understanding of going forward. What does that mean? Is it just lifting our feet and putting them down? Lifting and shifting and putting the foot down and so forth? Is that all? No. Or just touching sensation or feelings or perceptions of our movement? No. But we must use them to see what happens to the mind when we do them. When we move, what happens to the mind? When we move forward, we must be aware of the changes, impermanence of those movements. Along with this awareness of impermanence, we must look at our distorted perception of I, my mind, to understand that this is not I, this is not myself, this is not I am. Now, meaning the notion of I, this is very difficult thing for people to understand, but notion of I totally vanish when we see the activities performed in what is called going forward. Notion of I will disappear. What we see is a dependently arising phenomena. Dependently arising phenomena. This is called penetrative insight. But we cannot see this, we cannot gain this understanding if we use subject-object sentences like I lift, I shift, I move, I put the foot down, and I feel, and so forth. If we use the word I, then we do not see what is happening. So, on the one hand, we see impermanence. On the other hand, that which is impermanent does not have this I. And this is the very thing that we read in other sutras, like Anatta Lakkhana Sutta. Buddha asked, is this permanent or impermanent? Venerable, the bhikkhu said, this is impermanent. Is that which is impermanent or impermanent, is it satisfactory or not satisfactory? It is not satisfactory. If that is not not permanent, not satisfactory, is it proper for us to say that this is I, this is myself, this belongs to me? Etang mama, eso amasmi, eso me atta. This belongs to me, this is mine, this is I, this is myself. Now, this is the thing that we cannot get rid of from our mind. We keep thinking in these terms. So long as we have, it is perfectly all right for us to use them only for the purpose of communication, for expressing our feelings, ideas and so forth, to use I, me, mine and so forth, even myself. But when we develop our insight, mindfulness, we do not try to see I moving when we make the movement. We see mere activities, phenomenon. Why do we want to do that? We want to gain this understanding in order to reduce our rigidity, uptightness, our ego, which is a very big thing that we have, ego. Not only in walking, but engaged in any activity, we should be able to see that these things are happening dependent upon other factors. Another thing, that means looking at the mind. Another example, talking, that is given also in the discourse, talking. When we have conversation, talking, of course we don't talk to ourselves. When we talk to somebody or talk with somebody. Either we give instructions or have a conversation or ask somebody to do something. So conversation, talking, we do in various ways for various things. In all these situations where we talk, when we talk, in modern society there is a new communication system called non-violent communication. Non-violent communication. NVC. Many books are written on this topic. There have been many discussions. Classes are held. There are specialists in schools, universities, classes, societies, and so forth and so on. This nonviolent communication is very clear example of the way how we practice mindfulness when we talk. When we talk mindfully, during the conversation there will not be any room for greed, hatred, delusion, fear, anxiety, worry to arise. Why? We always talk mindfully. When we talk mindfully, we listen mindfully. When we listen mindfully, we listen very sympathetically. We listen with compassion. We listen with love, metta. We listen with respect. So to hear what the other person says. People talk. Other person may say something with emotions, with a lot of pain, to communicate something, to tell something to us, or somebody may talk to us with ego, doesn't matter. When we mindfully listen, we can easily understand where this person comes from, where this conversation comes from, what the person really wants to tell us. We can hear. But if we listen, if we hear with a certain decided position that this person either does not know, this person is wasting my time, this person is sheerly emotional, and so forth and so on, with a sort of a judgmental attitude, if we listen, then we cannot hear. And when we talk to them, we must talk with love, practicing metta, in order to relieve the other person's anxiety, worry, pain, suffering, disappointment. Talk to the other person with the intention of making the person understand. If we talk with ego, we may try to show off, to impress the person how much we know, how superior I am, try to make the person believe that I know everything, you know nothing, then we don't make the communication. We are not mindful. We increase our ego. So there has to be, when we practice mindfulness in conversation, we allow our own compassion, our respect, our simplicity, friendliness, our warm heart, we learn to express when we talk. Then, in the Buddhist teaching, he has already pointed out, when we talk mindfully, we see how much greed arises in our mind, how much resentment arises in our mind, how confusion or ignorance arises in our mind, then immediately we try to look at that particular state of mind to reduce our greed, our craving, our ego, our selfishness, and so forth. During conversation, when we have this kind of mindful conversation, then the conversation becomes meaningful. Sometimes people ask, how can we meditate when there are a lot of disturbances around us? How can we meditate? What happens to us when we hear sounds, we go after the sounds and we question who makes the sounds, why makes the sound, why at this time, this is a nuisance, this makes me unhappy, this disturbs my meditation, how can I meditate, and so forth. We keep criticizing, analyzing and speculating and getting angry and accusing the sound. But when we have the sound, when we hear the sound, If we are mindful, we don't go after those things. We rather pay attention to our own mind to see what the sound does to us within ourselves. Whether the sound arouses our greed, our hatred, our resentment, our confusion, what sort of things we experience when we hear the sound. And then instead of going after the sound, we go inside, into within ourselves. Sometimes people, when they don't hear the word inside, they say, this is inside meditation. Meditation happening inside. That is true. That is really so. It's true. So we go inside, into our own mind, to see what is happening within ourselves. So we learn to look at our own mental reactions to the disturbances that we experience. So, when we practice mindfulness, we learn more about ourselves and to calm ourselves, reduce our disturbances within ourselves. So, instead of when people ask, how do I know how much I have gained from my meditation, where I am, and so forth, we must look at ourselves to see how often I got angry before, how much I do not get angry now, how often, how much I was disturbed by very tiny little disturbances that happened outside. How little am I disturbed now compared to my disturbances I had in the past? How confused I was then, how less confused I am now? How unkind I was, how kind I am? How unloving I was, how loving I am now? How egotistic I was, how less egotistic I am now? So you can gauge, you can measure, you can understand the progress within yourself. You are the one who practice meditation, who can give certificate, sign your own certificate. No meditator can tell how much progress you have made. You are the one who know exactly how much progress you have made. So, that means when we meditate, we always must look at our mind. Look at our mind. Whether we practice body meditation, meditation on our feelings, meditation on the consciousness, meditation on mental activities, all boils down to looking at the mind. Because Buddha said very clearly, in thousands of places, in almost every sutta, we have to deal with the mind. Because mano pubbangama dhamma, everything comes from the mind. Everything ends up in the mind. Everything comes out of the mind. Everything ends up in the mind. And therefore, looking at our feet when we walk, or just simply walk very slowly, or analyzing, criticizing, keeping, breaking down into nitty-gritty, tiny details always of various material things, is not going to look, going to see what is happening to the mind, is not going to train the mind. This is a mental training. In the mental training, we go to look at the mind. Of course, all these things, when we make movements, movements begin in the mind. When we walk slowly, we must look at the mind, what is happening while I'm walking. Am I pretending? Am I trying to show off? Am I egotistic? Am I proud? Am I angry? Look at the mind. So, in Buddha's meditation technique, he gave various examples of outer expressions of inner mechanism. All inner mechanism is expressed through outer words, outer agents, like a body, words. There's a very beautiful discourse, one out of 18,000 discourses, I just picked one. Upali Sutta in Majjhima Nikaya. Upali was a Nigantha's follower. So I don't want to give the whole discourse. I just want to bring that that particular part pertaining to my little talk. Upali came to see the Buddha and said to the Buddha, "Venerable, which is the most effective? Which of the things you consider to be the most serious, most important? The physical action, verbal action, or mental actions? The things that you do physically, or the what you speak with your words, verbally, or what you think? Which of these three you consider to be the most serious?" Then Buddha asked him the same question, "What do you think?" Buddha asked Upali, "What do you think?" He said, "Of course, physical action is more important. That's the most serious. Then the verbal, then the mental." He put in this order. Then Buddha asked him, "Are you sure?" "Yes, I'm sure." Then Buddha asked him again, "Do you speak based on truth?" He said, "Yes, I speak based on truth." So Buddha asked him again, three times he asked him. Each time he said, "Yes, this is my position. Physical activities are most serious, most important than all other activities." "Is it so?" Buddha asked. Then Buddha said, then Upali asked Buddha again, "What do you think, Venerable Sir? Which is most important? Physical, verbal, or mental?" Buddha said, "I say mental activities are more serious." Then Upali said, "No, Venerable Sir, I don't believe that." Then Buddha asked, "All right. You believe according to Nigantha's teaching, they even don't drink cold water. Because when they drink cold water, if they drink cold water, they destroy living beings. they always drink boiled water. Suppose a Niganta, you a priest, face a situation where he cannot get hot water for a day, 2 days, 3 days, 4 days, because he's observing his principles not to drink cold water. He always wants to drink hot water. And he cannot get hot water for a day, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 days, then what happens to him? He will die. Niganta said he would, the Upali said he would die. Upali, be mindful. You first said physical action is most important. Now, why did he die? Because he determined not to drink cold water. Is the determination physical or mental? Yes. It is mental. So Buddha proved that mental activity is more serious than physical activity. You perform physical activity which originates in the mind. So you made the determination, commitment in your mind not to drink cold water, and you died. So Buddha gave several examples, and he proved that mental activities are more important than physical activities, because everything begins in the mind. So in meditation, what we do is going into the mind, seeing what is happening in the mind, not just mere analyzing. If you keep analyzing, no matter how long you analyze, there is no end to analysis, because there are so many trillions of things are happening in our body and mind at any given time. And you will be amazed to see how many things are happening and how easily you can get carried away with your analytical knowledge. Instead, Buddha said, you just become aware of what is happening in relation, what is happening in the mind in relation to your eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body and mind, which are our world. Eyes, ears, tongue, body and mind interact with their respective external objects, form, sound, smell, taste, touch and thoughts. So this is our world. In this world, we must see the way how we interact with internal, external things, and what happens when we interact with external things, what happens in our mind. So, if we go after analyzing, then we build up a conceptual proliferation. Conceptual proliferation is unending jargon of thoughts. Unending jargon of thoughts. If the philosophers can do that, psychologists can do that, mathematicians can do that, physicians can do that, keep on building up thoughts after thought, concept after concept, and that is also what the Buddha said in Madhupindika Sutta, Chakkuncha Bhikkhave Paticca Rupecha Uppajjati Chakku Vijnana Thinna Sangati Paso Pasa Paccaya Vedana Yang Vedeti Tang Sanjanati Yang Sanjanati Tang Papancheti Papan Tato Nidanam Purisanti Papanya Sanya Sankha Samudacharanti Atita Nagata Pachupanesu Chakku Vijnesu Rupesu, and so forth. Because when there is I, visual objects, when these come together, consciousness arises. Depending on consciousness, a feeling arises, pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral. Depending on feeling, we recognize, we perceive, and depending on recognition, perception, we think, and then we begin to perpetuate our thinking. Depending on what we have seen, heard, smelled, tasted, touched, and thought of the past things, depending on what we will think, what we will see, hear, smell, taste, touch, and think of the future, depending on what we are thinking now, what we are seeing, hearing, smelling, touching, tasting, and thinking now, see, the amount of things that we have in the past, that we will have in the future, that we will have, that we have now, to think. So many things are there for us to think. And it is endless thinking. We can spend our entire life thinking. Where are we? How much insight we gain? How much mental development we can gain? We build up what is called conceptual proliferation. Proliferation is multiplication. When tiny little cellular being is born in the mother's womb, they will be proliferate. Proliferate means multiplication, multiply, multiply, multiply. So, the thoughts can multiply by leaps and bounds, endlessly to infinity. And therefore, in mindfulness meditation, we do not get involved that kind of conceptual proliferation. What we do is see impermanence. No matter how many things we have seen in the past, all were impermanent. How many things we see now? Impermanent. How many things we will see in future? Impermanent. Whether we saw, heard, smelled, tasted, touched, and thought of the past, all gone. Whatever we are thinking, whatever we are seeing, hearing, smelling, touching, tasting, and thinking, now gone. Whatever we will in future, see, hear, smell, taste, touch, and think, disappear. And if we see this, then we are practicing mindfulness. And then we will be able to reduce our greed, our hatred, our delusion, our ego, our selfishness, our pride, our jealousy, by seeing, after all these are impermanent, why should I cultivate hatred? All these are impermanent, why should I try to cling to something? All these are impermanent, why should I have pride? So we see, we ask this question and go into our mind, and then we learn to let go, practice nekkhamma sankappa, practice the thought of letting go. Letting go is nissarana. We can do the letting go only when we see the reality. To see the reality, we have to have one more step, that is nibbida. Nibbida means dispassion or disenchantment. The word disenchantment and dispassion sounds very negative. In Sinhalese we say kala kirenawa. So sometimes when people become disenchanted, dispassioned, they think that they are so hopeless. They just give up, become just complacent. That is not the meaning of this passion. This passion arises from insight, from understanding, knowing, seeing. When you are very wise, then arises this passion. Buddha gave a very beautiful simile of little children playing with sand castles. Little children play with sand castles on the beach, and they really enjoy their real thing in their mind. You might have seen little children cooking, artificial, imaginary cooking, and they take a toy pot and make something and then put their hand or spoon and feed you. You also just say like this, just to please the child. You know that there is nothing to eat, but just to please the child you do that. In child's mind, that's the real food. Child feed you. Child has a little doll and lull and feed. When the child grows up, the boy or girl, just ignore it. Doesn't pay any attention to it. Why? Disenchanted with that particular state. Why? Matured, understood, gained some understanding. We are like that. We always see something, and when we see, after all, that is impermanent, then insight arises within us. Insight you cannot pinpoint. This is insight. Insight is this very important word to understand. Wisdom, in Buddha's teaching, wisdom, what is wisdom? Wisdom is seeing the noble truth, four noble truth, seeing that I am free. I am free. I have no binding, no obligations, no commitments, no greed, no hatred. Seeing this is wisdom. When we become wise, and that is why the Buddha said, "Ko attho udapanena, apache sabbadasyum, tanhaya mulato chetva kissa pariyesanam chare." Ko attho udapanena, what is the use of a well, apache sabbada siyon, when the water is available always. When water is available always, what is the use of a well? We drill a well when there is no water. Water is not available always. So Buddha said, what is the use of a well? When water is available always, similarly, tannaya mulato chetva kissa pariyesanam chare. When craving completely cuts off, destroyed, uprooted, removed, what is the use of search? What do we search? What do we search? Research. Look for. What for? We search to satisfy our greed. We research to satisfy our need. When there is no greed, no need, what is the use of search? When one comes to that kind of understanding, wisdom, then one becomes disenchanted. Because by letting go, you get everything. It is sort of paradoxical. By collecting, accumulating, you lose everything. It is we practice impermanence, cultivate impermanence in our mind, develop impermanence. When we cultivate, develop impermanence, we reached permanence. By cultivating impermanence, we reach permanence. That is Nibbana. By seeing unsatisfactoriness, pain, suffering, we come to a painless, sufferingless state. By practicing meditation on death, we come to deathless state. Practicing marana and arriving amara. Practicing mindfulness of death and reach deathless state. So all these are very meaningful paradox. So when we practice mindfulness, we look at this our own mental state. By letting go, we get everything to make us peaceful and happy. So friends, mindfulness meditation, insight meditation, Buddha's meditation is meditation that keeps peeling off, removing layers and layers and layers of mental impurities until we reach the pure, perfect purity and peace and harmony. By just mere breaking down, analyzing alone, it will not happen. So with these few words, I like to encourage you to meditate. As I said, this is a subject that will never become out of date. Meditation subject is always current, fresh. So we like to remain fresh, remain current, up to date. And I hope you will enjoy your practice, not enjoy as you go to a party. This is a different type of enjoyment. That enjoyment makes you tired. This enjoyment makes you refresh. This enjoyment makes you calm, peaceful and happy. That enjoyment makes you excited, agitated and tired. And therefore, try to have this enjoyment. Enjoyment of peace, enjoyment of happiness. So I wish you happy, peaceful, good night.